Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Ballet is just back from a successful European tour last month with performances in Verona, Seville, Lugano, and Turin. Now closes its season this weekend with a triple bill titled Signature Series from Ballet to Broadway, which will feature three-time Tony Award-winning choreographer Andy Blankenbuehler and the premiere of his Remember Our Song. Blankenbuehler is the choreographer of Hamilton and the upcoming film adaptation of Cats, and his work will be alongside two giants of American dance who created masterful choreography for both the dance and Broadway stage. George Balanchine's Who Cares features the music of George and Ira Gershwin and recalls the great footwork between Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And Jerome Robbins' 1945 ballet, Fancy Free, the first collaboration between Robbins and Leonard Bernstein, of course, which culminated a decade later in West Side Story, is a seminal piece of American dance. The Signature Series gets underway tonight at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center on the TU campus, with additional performances Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 7:30, and with matinees Saturday and Sunday at 2:30. My guest today is Tulsa Ballet's Artistic Director, Marcello Angelini. Marcello Angelini, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Rich.
Big season for Tulsa Ballet comes to a conclusion this weekend with a program titled Signature Series from Ballet to Broadway. And undoubtedly, the highlight will be the premiere of Andy Blankenbuehler's new piece, Remember Our Song. Now, tell us about how this relationship between the choreographer of Hamilton and Tulsa Ballet came about.
It's a story that started in 1986.
1986, wow.
Not with Andy. Oh. You know, we were dancing, Daniel and I were dancing with the Northern Ballet Theatre, and we had the privilege of working with Gillian Lynn. Gillian Lynn, the choreographer of Cats, Cabaret, Phantom of the Opera. She choreographed 40, 50 Broadway shows. Northern Ballet was called to do a TV show, actually, on the life of L.S. Lowry, a British painter. And Gillian was asked to choreograph it and direct it. And from that day, I mean, we were amazed about the energy of this woman and her ability to transform thoughts and words into movement, into steps. I mean, that was a revelation, really, and her energy in the studio. And so we sort of got curious about, you know, the Broadway world, and we went to see Phantom of the Opera, and from that day I was hooked, totally hooked. To this day, I go to New York for auditions every year, and rather than going to see the two largest American ballet companies, New York City Ballet or American Ballet Theatre, I always buy a ticket for a Broadway show.
For one of the biggest dancing shows, I assume.
absolutely. And so I grew to be passionate about this art form. And I remember probably 7, 8 years ago, we were on a beach in Destin with a couple of friends of ours. We spend a week, long weekend there with the Creamballs every year. And they love You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars, those shows. And they were telling me, why don't you do something with a choreographer that is outside the spectrum of ballet, and, you know, try something different. And while the idea of working with a choreographer from Dancing with the Stars really didn't catch on with me, I started thinking, well, what about if we try something with a Broadway choreographer? And so I start asking people around who are the best ones and the greatest ones. And somebody tossed out the name of Andy Blankenbuehler, but they didn't know how to get in touch with him. So I researched it on the internet. I found out that he was teaching some master classes in a center in New York. I contacted the head of the center. Fortunately, somebody that I knew him, got his email address, started talking with him. And he was extremely nice. We talked for a year. We actually got to the point of the contract, sending him a contract and, you know, discussing it was the piece was programmed. And then he wrote to me and he said, look, something came up. I was offered a gig on Broadway that I believe is going to be, you know, really, really big. And so I'm going to take a rain check. That was 2014. 2017, I'm reading Dance Magazine, and here is a spread about this choreographer that has done this show that everybody's talking about. The name was Hamilton. And mind you, I had never met Andy, so I didn't know how he looked like. And the name rang a bell, but I have always been bad with names since I was a teenager. So it's not a question of old age. and I did a search on my computer, and there he popped up. And that was the same Andy. So I wrote to him, I said, Andy, was the gig you had on Broadway Hamilton? And he goes, yeah, it was. I said, well, then it's my time to cash in on the rain check. And to my surprise, he said, yeah, absolutely. Let's do something together. And, you know, fast forward to this weekend, we are opening his first piece for a ballet company here in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So let's talk about the differences between dancing for Broadway and for dancing for ballet. Obviously, in a Broadway show, a dance is 3, 4, 5 minutes of really intense energy, and then, you know, they go back to singing, they go back to acting and going on with the show and the plot of the show. What are the other differences between that style of dance and what your company is capable of, which is goes from everything from a very modernistic to classic ballet?
Well, the program is titled From Ballet to Broadway and Broadway to Ballet. Uh-huh. And so we opened the program with two choreographers, the two fathers of American dance, ballet, Jerome Robbins and George Balanchine, who were able to cross the divide between ballet and Broadway and be extremely successful at both. Balanchine, Slaughter on Fifth Avenue, On Your Toes, Jerome Robbins, Fiddler on the Roof, The King and I, and then they went back to ballet. And this time it's like, okay, let's see what happens when you take a Broadway choreographer and bring him to our art form. I think that's why it was so interesting for Andy to do something with the ballet company, because suddenly he wanted to see what happens when you strip his choreographic abilities from the words and from a storyline, and you need to make your dance the thing, the stuff, the performance. It is it. I think he liked that challenge, and he has succeeded extremely well. At a certain point, he had to insert some words into the music because he said, I feel like I need words to say something. But it has been a great experience for him, I think, and also for our dancers. You see, what I admire about Broadway performers, Broadway dancers, Broadway choreographers is the sharpness, the commitment to every step, every movement. Doesn't matter if you see the first performance or performance number 2000, the energy is always there. And you can see when you work with somebody like Andy, how he channels that energy into the dancers and motivates them to be sharp and accurate in every single particular and detail of the dance. So I think at the end of the day, we learned something from him that I hope we can carry in our careers. And I also think that Andy has had a wonderful experience. He came to see us at the Joyce Theater in New York. And actually, he got kind of nervous. He said, oh my gosh, your dancers are so good and so versatile, and they can do anything you ask them with their bodies. But then going into the studio, he realized that as ballet dancers, we sort of tend to hide behind our technique. And Broadway is a little bit like ballet used to be in the 60s and 70s and 80s. At that time, we used the steps to tell a story. I remember working in England with English National Northern Ballet, and all the ballet masters, the artistic directors would, you know, let me run a story and then look at me and say, what did you want to say? Well, did you see all the pirouettes and jumps I did? Yeah, but what did you want to say? And that sort of opens the eyes to the fact that the dance is a means of communication. Well, Broadway is still that, because through the dancing, through the words and the singing, they are telling you a compelling story. And I think opening the eyes to the dancers that, you know, we need technique. Technique is very important, but it's a mean to an end. It's a tool to do something rather than the end in itself, has opened a new horizon for everybody.
It's really interesting you say that he pays such sharp attention to every single detail that the dancers are doing. When I think of his association with the Fosse legacy, and of course his work on various Fosse projects since Fosse's death, Bob Fosse's death, the great Broadway choreographer, you think of his signature style is everything about, you know, economy of motion and a single shoulder move communicating volumes. Does he have that same approach?
Absolutely. I mean, if the chin is to be down 2 degrees, because the way you're moving your head, it gives me a totally different message. And that's the thing that I try to tell our dancers, obviously coming from a different generation. And sometimes the young ones, they look at you and say, but I did 10 pirouettes, just like I used to say to my directors, but I just did 10 pirouettes. Again, it's very important for dancers to understand this message, that it doesn't matter how good we are as dancers, as technicians. At the end of the day, we are artists, and we need to use those tools in order to communicate with an audience. And Andy is stressing this message with every single move. And hopefully we can retain all that and use it for classical ballets.
So tell us a little bit about this piece that he's created, Remember Our Song. Is there a story attached? Is it pure dance or what exactly?
Yes, there is a story. I mean, he has to tell a story.
Yeah.
He's a Broadway choreographer. You know, he has to tell a story. And so it takes place during World War II. And we follow a group of sailors who are being deployed in a submarine, and they say goodbye to their girlfriends, and then they get into the submarine, they get underwater, and there are ships that are looking for this submarine. And during World War II, if the sonar was trying to pinpoint where the submarine was, you had to stand absolutely still, because the smallest noise inside the submarine would be picked up by the sonars, and then they would bomb you and sink you. And so while everybody's in this moment of stillness and trying not to move, they start thinking about their girlfriends. After all, they are very young. And so we see the girlfriends in their dream coming on stage, and they dance, and suddenly somebody drops something, and boom, they are bombed. I mean, it's a wonderful concept. And last night we were talking about, you know, maybe this is just one of the aspects of this work, because then we can explore what happens to the ladies and what happens to the guys, and maybe extend it to a full-length ballet. I mean, the guy is a volcano of ideas.
So, again, you're exploring this idea of stillness, though, at some point within the dance.
But stillness on stage is very hard to achieve. And that's another thing we were talking about last night, because there is a lot of stillness in Fancy Free by Jerome Robbins that opens this program. And I was telling Anne, I was saying, you know, that there are some moments that I feel the energy is sort of dropping. And he goes, yeah, well, stillness is the hardest thing to accomplish on stage, because if you are standing still and you still want to gather the attention of the audience, there needs to be an emotional energy invested in that stillness that is sometimes beyond what most artists are able to achieve. And yeah, stillness is hard.
Tell us about the decision to put this new piece with these two classic works, Who Cares and Fancy Free. Fancy Free, one of Jerome Robbins' first huge success, music of Leonard Bernstein, set in World War II, about sailors on leave. It spawned On the Town. This is it's an amazing ballet, sort of a staple of companies ever since it was premiered. Tell us about what you're doing with this particular piece.
Well, the thing is, again, the philosophy behind the program is exploring choreographers that were successful in the ballet world and made it big in Broadway, and a choreographer that is big on Broadway trying for the first time to work with a ballet company. And in that context, the two greatest American choreographers that were also fantastic assets on the Broadway scene were Jerome Robbins and George Balanchine. Why Fancy Free? Well, because he spanned the musical On the Town, so it makes perfect sense. And so we start seeing, you know, the sailors when they are off the ship, and, you know, they wreak a little bit of havoc in a bar. Obviously, they are young, and, you know, there is a little bit of a fight between them, and girls are involved and trying to impress the girls. That opens the program, and then we see them on deployment with the last piece, you know, of the program, the Andy Black and Bueller piece. Who cares? Well, it's again celebrating another great American choreographer, Russian American, of course, that has made it big both in ballet and on Broadway. One that has really undersigned dance and ballet in this country as a classical ballet, neoclassical choreographer, but at the same time has also choreographed extremely successful pieces on Broadway. So the question is, are the traits of personality and the qualities necessary to succeed as a ballet choreographer the same that we need in order to succeed as a Broadway choreographer? Well, I was looking for this answer, and I can tell you that my answer is yes, absolutely. It's communication. Because whether it's Jerome Robbins in Fancy Free or George Balanchine in Who Cares, those pieces communicate feelings. They communicate passion, love, and happiness, and whatever, or a whole range of human feelings to the audience, just like Broadway world does. And when you manage to establish that connection between the audience and the performer, boom, that's success.
These two latter pieces that we're talking about, the company has done them over the years from time to time. You took Balanchine's Who Cares to Europe recently. Given the care that Andy Blankenbuehler has talked about your dancers about this idea of every single detail has to tell a story, are your dancers getting new insights into these two pieces that they may have danced several times over the last few years?
That's a good question that I need to ask our dancers. I don't know. What I can tell you for sure is that I am seeing what I have to do with our dancers in order to take the next step as a company, as an organization. Sometimes you doubt yourself. You start thinking, well, you know, it's a different generation. Maybe there are certain things that are not that important to share with them and to insist upon. And now seeing, again, Andy working with the dancers, I'm realizing that I can't let it go. It has to be like we were taught, and now it's our turn to teach the next generation of dancers the importance of not hiding behind technique, but using technique as a tool to tell a story, to send a message.
So let me ask you, as the man who's out in the audience watching these pieces take shape, are you seeing differences?
I wish I had an extra couple of weeks to really put the squeeze on everything. But overall, I mean, the company is looking great. And Judith Fugate, who is in charge of restaging both the Robbins piece and the Balanchine piece, she's extremely happy with how the company is dancing them.
My guest today is Marcello Angelini, the artistic director of Tulsa Ballet. Tulsa Ballet concludes their season with a triple bill titled Signature Series from Ballet to Broadway, tonight at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus, and five more shows will continue through Sunday evening at the Lorton Performance Center, featuring this new premiere of Andy Blankenbuehler's Remember Our Song, Jerome Robbins' Fancy Free, and George Balanchine's Who Cares? And these are two great American classics, and who knows, maybe we're seeing another American classic in the creation this weekend. You know, you were talking about George Balanchine. I think people forget that he was this choreographer who could create what used to be called commercial dance, you know, Broadway dance. We think of him as strictly for his neoclassical works with New York City Ballet. He was very, I guess, obviously very versatile, and Who Cares gives us a sense of that.
Well, George Balanchine invented something that is truly American, that is, dance was an imported good during the 1940s. Well, there was really not much dance before the 1940s and 50s in the United States.
What we call classical dance.
Yeah, exactly, ballet. And then ballet youth came, and they got stranded here during World War II, and then Balanchine opened the first school and the first ballet company, and they were very tight on money. And so Balanchine had to make one piece after the other, and in order to make the company survive and himself survive, he had to choreograph on Broadway. And because of necessity, I think, he created so many pieces and so many masterpieces. But in the process of doing all that, he invented something that is brand new, an American style of dancing that mixes the the classical, the pure classical ballet technique of the Kirov, the Russian, with the freedom and the aesthetics and the fast paced and the ability to cover space that is typical of American dancers. And so this mixture together, the mixture of those two cultures, invented something that now has been copied by generations of choreographers, both in Europe and in America.
Now, in the case of Who Cares, this within itself is a little more of a crossover piece between the two, the Broadway style of Balanchine and the neoclassical style of Balanchine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Who Cares is one of those ballets that ages me every time the curtain goes up. I mean,
why does it age you?
Because it's very difficult. Oh my gosh. I mean, the ballet is so difficult technically. And we have two casts that are extremely good in the piece. But boy, when we were doing it in Europe, every performance, I was getting an extra handful of gray hair because we were moving from country to country, from theater to theater. One theater, one stage was small, the other one was big. And you know, some in Seville, we had an 1,800 seats theater that was totally sold out. In Lugano, a brand new opera house that opened 4 years ago, carved into the mountain, at 260 million Euros theater. And you know that you are in front of an audience and in front of critics that have never seen you before, that will probably never see you before. So they are going to tell you exactly what they think without any consideration because you are the community's company. And bringing a ballet like Who Cares there, and Shibuya Blues, which was created for the company, so it's sort of the signature of who we are today, was very stressful. The other side of the coin is that fortunately we brought back a bunch of extremely good reviews. We were called definitely one of the top 10 American ballet companies. We were called tier one in the world, and tier one in the world are the national companies, the Paris Opera, the Bolshoi, the American Ballet Theater, Australian Ballet. While I don't think that we are there, I'm very flattered that they thought we were.
Yeah. Of course, you brought Kurt Jost, The Green Table, which that was also a great attraction for them because I guess that's not even done all that much in Europe.
No, those are pieces that it's very difficult to acquire them. There are a ton of rules in the contract and companies need to be adjudicated in order to dance them. That also applies, of course, to Who Cares and Fancy Free. You don't just buy those pieces off the shelf. The company needs to be among a certain group of companies with a certain quality, and then you are awarded those pieces. And yes, with The Green Table, we had to do something totally opposite and very light-hearted before performing that piece, because Green Table is kind of heavy. So to create a little bit of color, to make sure that the audience in the theater wouldn't cut their veins at the end of the show, we had to put something extremely light before The Green Table, and Who Cares provided that tour.
Now, for this weekend, you're doing 6 shows in a weekend. I guess the European tour was sort of a prepare for this because it's sort of the same situation. Even though it's not as many shows, you're moving from city to city, setting up, tearing down, and moving to the next city. What is that aspect? Is that important for the dancers to experience something like that?
I think what is important for the dancers is to see the reaction of foreign audiences and foreign reviews to the company. Sometimes we start thinking, well, maybe our audience is partial to us. Well, maybe our reviewers are partial to us. Maybe they like us because we are the community company. But when you are in Seville, in a theater that has seen every single major company in the world, and they call you one of the 10 American ballet companies, and the only complaint they have is that you are there for only one show, and when the curtain goes down and you know the applause doesn't finish, and the lights in the auditorium go up and the applause doesn't finish, and at a certain point I have to run backstage and the applause doesn't finish, and they have to get the company on stage for one more bow and the applause doesn't finish, and we lift the curtain and everybody starts screaming. Well, I think that tells the dancers that what we are doing in Tulsa really matters and that we are probably better than we think we are.
And of course, that's the difference between a European audience oftentimes and an American audience. American audience follows the stage instructions, and when the curtain comes down, the lights come up, we leave. If well, not before, sometimes.
Well, the American audience tends to be more polite.
Yeah,
if you do a good show, they cheer you and they stand up. If you do a mediocre show, they still sort of cheer you. European audiences are very different. They are very spontaneous. If they like you, they make sure you know. If they don't, they also make sure you know. And again, sold out theaters and audiences didn't want to leave the theater in every single city. And that made us, we came back saying, wow, we built something quite special in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Now, you're not doing these shows at the PAC, you're doing them at the Lorton Performance Center. What does that theater offer differently?
Intimacy. Shows like Triple Bills especially, they are more chamber performances. You need to see the face of the dancers. You need to almost be on stage with them. The PAC is a fantastic house, but it's so big that if you sit in the back of the auditorium or, you know, in the mezzanine, it's very hard to get the energy.
Or get the detail, too.
Or get the details, absolutely. It's fantastic to see big shows like Swan Lake and Sleeping Beauty because you can see all the patterns. You are not in the weeds, but you can see all the designs on the stage and the, you know, the number of people that are on the stage. But when you're doing Fancy Free or Who Cares, it is four dancers and six dancers on that huge stage, and you are so far away from them, it's hard to get involved in the show. And so the Lorton is a fantastic house because it still has a very big stage, almost as big as the PAC, but the distance between the audience and the performer is much less. And so you are transported on stage with those smaller works much better than you would at the PAC.
And of course, there's more seats than there are at Studio K, too.
Well, and that's the other thing, and there is a flying bridge. So Lorton is really in between our Studio K and the PAC. The other great thing about Lorton is that being a smaller house, it allows us to do more shows. And when you put on a program like this one with three fantastic works, it's important for the dancers to dance them because ballet is a performing art. We can't spend six, 8 weeks in the studio preparing this show. And then we do three shows, which means one cast will do two shows and the other cast will do one show. They need to perform them because eventually, through the experience of being in front of an audience, that's when they grow. That's when the company grows, not in the studio, not just preparing the show. And so at Lorton, we get double the number of shows. Everybody can get a chance to dance the ballet more than once, two or three times. And at the end of the day, the entire company raises up.
All right. You can see the company raising up this weekend in six shows, beginning tonight at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. The signature series from ballet to Broadway. Marcello Angelini, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Marcello Angelini is the artistic director of Tulsa Ballet. Tulsa Ballet presents Signature Series featuring Fancy Free by Jerome Robbins, Who Cares by George Balanchine, and Remember Our Song by Andy Blankenbuehler. Performances get underway this evening at 7:30 with additional performances Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 7:30, matinees Saturday and Sunday at 2:30 at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus at 550 South Gary Place. For ticket information, visit tulsaballet.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.